Accession number 16623, Reel 1.
Dr. Martin, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
In Vienna.
And which year was this?
1913.
Can you tell me something about your family background, what your father did for a living and so on, please?
My grandfather on my father's side was a brewer, he had three sons. My father was the youngest one. His two elder brothers were running the family business, the brewery. My father studied engineering at Vienna University, and he became what you would now call an electronics engineer. That is, he became an expert in telephones and signaling equipment, and he worked for years for a multinational firm, Siemens in Germany, and represented them later in Czechoslovakia as their local agent for their radio arm, which was then called Telefunken. And my mother was born in Budapest, a banker's daughter, and she met my father in Vienna because she had a very good voice and studied at the conservatory in Vienna.
What was your parents' attitude in terms of loyalty towards a particular state, as far as you could tell?
Well, they were, I think I would call, Austrian. They lived within 2 or 3 hours by motor car from Vienna in Moravia, and their sort of educational allegiance was to Vienna, and this remained so right until the 20s, when my father and I agreed that things had changed entirely, in the sense that Austria became a very small, shrunk country with very little influence, and the same as this country, through the British Council, tries to influence and attract people all over the world to British culture. So the French government in those days made a special effort to attract the young people in Czechoslovakia, and they sent their people and their films and their newspapers to Czechoslovakia. The first president of Czechoslovakia, Thomas Masaryk, was an unbelievably fortunate choice. He was a lecturer in Slavonic languages at the UCLA and had an American wife. And when he came over to be president, he had all the sort of ideal sort of concepts of being a president. He created public libraries free of charge. He insisted on equality before the law of all the various languages. They later on allegedly persecuted Sudeten Germans, had their own newspapers, their own members of parliament, the right to speak German in a court of law, and so on. So we were moving towards becoming another Switzerland under that direction. But our allegiance to Vienna gradually shrunk, while our interest in France constantly increased. So by the time I left school and was thinking of studies, there was a reciprocity agreement between the Sorbonne and the King Charles University in Prague. And I studied partly at the Sorbonne during my preclinical phase and partly in Czechoslovakia in Prague. And so my Francophile attitude was constantly encouraged.
Had your parents been loyal supporters of the Habsburg dynasty?
Oh, no. My mother hardly spoke German. She spoke German badly. She spoke Czech even worse. She liked to speak French and, of course, Hungarian.
But was your father an admirer of the Habsburg dynasty?
No, but his behavior pattern was that of a middle-class Austrian gentleman, you see. And he liked to go to Austria on holidays and so on, but he was the only one in the family who really was so, you see. I mean, I didn't have any dislike of the Austrians at all. I have happy memories of visiting Austria, but it never occurred to me to study in Vienna, which my father did.
Do you have any personal memories of the First World War?
No. I spent nearly the whole First World War in Hungary with my grandparents. They had a place in the country, and the first language I spoke was Hungarian.
Where did you have your early education?
I had my education in several places because my father worked in two or three countries. He worked in Berlin for a time, and so my very first two or three years at school were in Berlin. Then I was in Switzerland, in Zurich, for a year or two. And after the first 5 years of education, I spent the rest of my educational period entirely in Czechoslovakia, because by that time my father represented Siemens in Czechoslovakia and we were living in Moravia.
Whereabouts in Moravia?
In a place called Znojmo, Znojmo, Znojmo. It's a little town which was partly employing, possibly 10% of the population were employed in the brewery, the family brewery.
Had you at this stage thought of going into medicine?
I knew I wanted to be a doctor from the age of 10.
Why was that?
Well, I loved getting endless books, you see, on popular books on biology, on physiology and everything. I had also two or three doctors in the family, one quite a well-known surgeon.
And what did you think of the quality of the early education that you had?
Well, I was, I think, very lucky because by having gone to a school which was that was partly staffed by members of the Society of Jesus, I felt always that the Jesuits were dedicated teachers. So my grounding in Latin and Greek and mathematics was superb. I was later in life never able to make any use of Latin, but I was so good at it that I was chosen when I received my doctorate in medicine to speak for my year and address the professors in Senate House in a little speech of thanks in Latin, of course.
Now, can we come on to the rise of Hitler in 1933 in Germany, and to what extent did you feel that your way of life might be threatened by that?
Well, it wasn't personally threatened. My father and mother were Roman Catholics, and I was not involved in the Aryan laws which were practiced in Germany, but we of course felt very strongly about it, because the country was gradually attracting very large number of people who were Jewish and left Germany by being ostracized or actually persecuted. And it changed the whole pattern of social intercourse, in the sense that in Moravia a lot of people spoke Czech, some spoke Hungarian, quite a number spoke German, and it was a part of the country in which a lot of Austrian people of means had country estates. And it was perfectly natural until 1935 to find Austrian nobility and local successful people in business and Jewish professional people be on excellent terms, and their children meeting and enjoying each other's company. And from 1935 onwards, this stopped. You found that gradually there was a retreat, and the Jewish people gradually became separated and not, how shall I say, in any way treated like the Germans treated their Jews, but there was a sort of feeling one should perhaps not be too intimate. This was something that gradually became very obvious.
Did that affect you personally? Did you have any Jewish friends?
Oh yes, yes, indeed. You see, I going to a good, what you would call grammar school, you see, you found, of course, that in my own class, you see, the boys, they came from various backgrounds, and we had several Jewish boys in my class. And they were sons and doctors of lawyers and so on. This, in fact, was to me always one of the sort of sad things, that the percentage of Jews in the population being, let's say, I don't know, 1 or 2%, the percentage of Jews in the professions, the law and medicine, was probably 20-30%, and when you think of acting and newspapers, even higher percentages, which caused a lot of jealousy.
Was there any active anti-Semitism?
No. By the time we got to the late 30s, 1938 and so on, there was a very strong Sudeten German movement of the German-speaking citizens of Czechoslovakia who wanted a form of independence. And they, of course, then aped everything the German Nazis did.
Did you know any Sudeten Germans intimately?
Very well, yes. I had a very good friend with whom I actually later on, we studied together in at the university. And I'm sorry to say, later on he became not only a party member, but he became a member of the Waffen-SS as a doctor. That was really the worst thing you could possibly do, yes. But he was a very nice chap. I met him after the war, actually. But that I'll tell you about later.
What about your own political opinions at that time? Did you have any? And if so, what were they?
The whole family were very strongly anti-Nazi for various reasons. They expressed this opinion very clearly too. The family in the brewery and so on, they like to prefer French goods to German goods, you see, to the extent of not buying German as a sort of intent. This didn't mean that members of the family didn't buy Mercedes cars, but the average sort of acquisitions, if they were a choice, German goods were neglected.
Did you join any political organization?
No.
Or were active in any?
By the time I was at university, I was too busy and too ambitious to engage in any political activity. I was completely, in any way, completely uninvolved and uninterested.
Why was that?
Well, you see, if you see, medicine, I think, is an extremely absorbing field, and I did very well to start with, both at the Sorbonne and at the King Charles University, and after I got an honors in my preclinical studies, I was selected to become what is called a demonstrator at the Institute of Pathology, which meant I got a room there and keep. And that filled my days completely. It meant supervising the young students doing their dissections and things like that. Supervise their microscopic histology training.
But what was your own personal attitude towards National Socialism?
Well, at the time we felt that we would never be really involved in it. We felt that you see, each year it became a darker and darker cloud. In the mid-30s, it never occurred to us. We were sorry for the Jews coming from Berlin and somewhere. Some were very nice people. But only when Hitler started going out to take the Rhineland and then Austria, that things began, well, that it involved us in the sense that it encouraged this very small German minority to assert themselves. And I always felt very unjustifiably, because they were having really the same rights practically as the German-speaking part of Switzerland has. You see, they had every right to speak their own language. They had their own newspapers, their own theaters, even a German-speaking university. They had their own members of parliament, and they were able to speak German in a court of law. They had German policemen in the towns with a mainly German residence. So I felt they had absolutely no case at all.
Did you go to the German or the Czech university in Prague?
I went to the German university in Prague.
Was there much difference between the two?
Well, it was considered the university with a staff of much more international merit. There were several professors there who had really truly international standing, and a lot of students came from various parts of Europe.
This is the German university.
Yeah.
You were talking about the Francophile feelings in your family. What was the attitude towards Great Britain?
We had none. I had visited Great Britain once, because I was in my formative years. I was a very keen Boy Scout, and towards the end of my school years, I think probably as a present on finishing school, I was given some money by some affluent relatives to go sort of more or less hitchhiking across Europe. And I went to Britain, it must have been 1930 or 1931, to attend a Boy Scout affair in Devon. And so I learned, of course, English at school, and possibly this visit gave me a little extra interest in the English language. But I therefore read some English journals, or American journals probably more, and books. But I read French much more than English.
Did you visit the German Reich?
I was a model student and an honor student. And so I was invited to go and attend the 1937 Olympics in Germany.
Was it 36, perhaps?
37. It was financed by the Bayer company, and we were invited to visit the 2 days we had, or 3 days, and we were also taken to the Bayer factory, shown around. There were about 20 of my fellow students and I. We were invited and given a good time.
What impression did Germany and its regime make on you from your first-hand visit?
Well, I had very strong anti-German feelings. They went back, I forgot, you see. I was my first sort of, how shall I say, acknowledgement of being good at my sort of medical studies was when I got an honors in the preclinical triad of anatomy, physiology, pathology, and as a little bonbon, as a little sort of inducement, I was invited to go to Munich to visit the institute of a very famous anatomist who produced one of the standard textbooks of surgical anatomy, a most magnificent thing, where you had transparent pages and you could sort of peel off first the skin, then the muscles, and then until you actually had explored the whole inside, let's say, of the chest or abdomen. Well, this man in Munich received me and another two fellow students on this visit, and we happened to get there at a most dramatic moment. It was the weekend when it was, I think, called the Night of the Long Knives, when Hitler got rid of all the opposition, and his favorite homosexual Röhm and others. And this was very dramatic, and Munich talked of nothing else, and everybody was terrified. And we, of course, as visitors, we felt some of the commotion and some of the fear. And of course, also, I saw the Hitler Youth marching, and I saw the stormtroopers in uniform. The whole thing was quite terrifying. I was back, glad to be back home.
Had you at that time felt that the new regime in Germany was a threat to Czechoslovakia?
No, I didn't. I was very innocent politically, and I felt it had nothing to do with us.
Now, can we go on to the Munich crisis of September 38, and can you tell me what your personal memories of it were and how it affected you?
Well, I qualified at the end of 37. I first got a basho, the baccalaureate of medicine, at the Sorbonne, and then I got my doctorate of medicine in Prague, and that must have been the end of 37. Well, I had an interest. I wanted to become a pediatrician, not because I liked children. I mean, everybody likes children, but I thought it was immensely attractive as a field for thorough research. I even now feel that, in my life in England, you see, gave me more experience. You see, so much was unscientific about children's diseases. I mean, even giving them the right dosage, it was sort of a question of weight and so on. It was all very primitive. And I thought to become a pediatrician would be fantastically interesting. And that's what I wanted to do. So when I qualified, I had already contacts through my having been a demonstrator in pathology for years. And I was promised a registrar's job at the University Children's Hospital as soon as I finished my compulsory military service of 12 months. And so immediately after I qualified, that was at the beginning of 1938, well, spring 38, I joined the Czech Army. And I was sent to the officers' cadet school in outside Prague. And I was promoted to, I think, Sergeant Cetáš, which is as far as you can go in the military service in your sort of compulsory year. And well, then the crisis blew up, and I was posted as medical officer to the 2nd Cavalry Regiment in Klatovy, on the border of Czechoslovakia. And of course, we were determined to defend Czechoslovakia. And it's now my feeling, having read memoirs of German generals, that the war would have been quickly over if Germany would have attacked Czechoslovakia at the time, and France and England would have stood by it. Because, you see, it was a very difficult country to attack. It was surrounded by mountains, and their armor and their air force wouldn't have had the sort of opportunities of the Polish campaign. In addition to that, Czechs had many friends. We were on very good terms with Russia, and we had endless thousands and thousands of volunteers from Czechoslovakia, from Yugoslavia, and from Belorussia, White Russia. And I always remember the night when Mr. Benesch gave in. He said, there was a joke, I have a plan, you know, Edward Benesch. And the joke was, he didn't have a plan, he had a plane to leave the country. But when that happened, I remember that night, there was the usual drinking in the mess. And there were some Yugoslav volunteers, and one crushed his glass of red wine and cut his palm wide open. You see, he was so upset about this letdown. And later on, in German biographies of generals, it was quite obvious that they were terrified of the military difficulties of crossing the mountains with very good sort of established defenses. The